Are you working on your author career but struggling to get that first book published? Does the goal of being an author seem too lofty? Or are thoughts of having multiple books and making a full-time living are as fantastical as living in Cinderella's castle? Welcome to Discovered Wordsmiths, a podcast where aspiring authors can be heard. Join Stephen Schneider as he finds and talks to authors you may not know, but authors that have gotten their foot on the author career path. Hear what they've done to get there and where they want to go now. Settle back. It's time for a bit of inspiration and advice. Come listen to today's Discovered Wordsmith.
Here's what I would have to say to other authors. Never give up writing. In the first place, it's a direct train station to your soul. Or for me, it is. No matter what I'm writing from my soul. And I need that. I need to be able to contact my soul. I need to be able to, anytime I sit down to write. I just wrote a little blog about Yom Kippur and that I got diagnosed with cancer on Yom Kippur. And even that is very soulful to me. I would say to writers, that no matter what people tell you, and people tell you a lot of stuff, there's a lot of needs for books out there now, and you should write, and you should write what you want to say to the world, because it's what you're going to leave behind. You know what I mean? My cats will be gone before I am, and nobody cares about my jewelry. Write what you need to say to the world. That would be my topic, is say it.
Well, then we'll have a little discussion about that here for the second half. Sound good?
Excellent.
All right. Susan, welcome back to Discovered Wordsmith Podcast. Let's talk a few author things. So you've done some screenplays and screenwriting. You've been an actress. So what did you learn from all that that you applied to writing a book? And what have you learned from writing the book that you're applying to the next one?
I'm good at dialogue because I wrote so many plays, and you really have to get good at making the characters do what you need them to do within the, you know, within the scene that they're in. I like my dialogue. I think it's, I think I get a lot of stuff in it. So I learned that from playwriting. In terms of structure, I'm not a structuralist to begin with. I kind of find if I sit down and I know that I want to write something, if I think about it long enough, I write little essays first. What do you want to say? Do you want to say that a 50-year-old woman could have a boy? Then once I've done that plotting out in sort of essay form what the book is about, then I sit down and the book writes me. And I am very grateful for that. I very rarely have to like make major cuts or major changes, because I'm not really, it's not, I don't want to get all woo woo woo. It's not automatic writing, but it does come so directly from my soul and from my brain. And if I've already mapped out, I want to write about, you know, this, then it will write it for me. And I can tell if it's not right. And I rewrite every day. So I go over what I wrote yesterday every, you know, the next day, and that's how I rewrite. I change words, I change phrases, but I very rarely writing a novel have had to change big chunks. And in my second novel, which I gave to an editor, she said, "You really don't like commas, do you?" Which I've been told before, and there were no edits. She said, "I didn't put in any edits. I think the book is ready. I put in a lot of commas because you seem to have a prejudice against them. You know, it's the product of not having paid attention in grammar class." And my computer tells me when to put in commas, and I get into arguments with it. But I learned from writing documentaries also. I learned a lot from writing documentaries about what are you writing about? What are you doing here? You know what I mean? If you're writing a documentary about, I'm going to try to keep it light. I didn't write any light documentaries. If you're writing a documentary about an election, okay, that's as light as it gets, then please don't find yourself talking about what you wore to go vote that day, because it's really not, nobody cares. So I know how to stay on topic, and my topics are usually somewhat surreal, or if not surreal, the dead are usually a part of the living in my books, and I like that. I like to be able to do that. So I learned that. That is not part of documentaries, but it was definitely where I was headed. My first play was about a nightclub in the clouds where everybody had to perform something to get off the nightclub into their next existence because they had all died. So I've learned a lot of that. I've learned
You mentioned your computer tells you when to put in commas. What do you use to write? What software or what services are you using to write your story?
I use Microsoft Word. I write on a Mac. Is that funny? Because it's so old. I write on Microsoft Word on a Mac. It's a Mac 10 something or other. It's I'm so not computer literate it's like when I was younger and people said, you should learn how to change a tire if you're going to drive on the highway. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to get a AAA card. I'm not that interested. I'm not good at technology. Right. You know what I mean? You have to know what you're good at and what you stink at. I stink at technology. So I use Microsoft Word. When I had to learn how to do the difference between a JPEG or a, what the hell is the form where the person can't edit it, PDF. That was hard for me. It was just as hard as it just was to say it. So I keep it as simple as I can. And I work, I have a husband who's really computer literate. So if I really run into, like trying to connect with you today, it said, you don't have Chrome. You can't talk to him. And I thought, what Chrome? Like, should I go to my car? I don't know what Chrome. So my husband came in and did that. So it hasn't been a big part of my writing life to learn the technology. It has been a big part of my writing life to learn social media, because one of the ways you can talk about your product is to write about it on social media. And that I'm good at. I don't know why. It's not because I'm good at hitting the buttons or connecting or making graphics. It's because I can write about my book in ways that make, I've done something called mapping the book, in which I take the audience of my social media post and say, this is something that happened to the character. And I take her on a journey through something that happens in the book. And that's made a lot of people interested, because the road not taken, I realized, could you have picked a dumber title? You know, Robert Frost wrote The Road Not Taken. So if you go look for me on Amazon,
right,
you're going to read his book, and it has nothing to do with me. Then if you looked at, then I looked the other day, because you're not ever supposed to look at your own stars on Amazon, but I just had to cheer myself up, which it did. And there's like 25 books called The Road Not Taken. So one thing I learned is don't use a title everyone else in the whole, like don't call the book The Bible because somebody else already used that title. Find a title. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know what my new book will probably be called 44 Horatio Street, because that's the name of the house and nobody else is going to call it that. But people have said to me, what the hell does that tell people about your book that would make them want to read it? Say something. So I'm thinking about that. But I learned a lot from plays, well, how people speak.
It makes me think it could be an offshoot like Sherlock Holmes.
Like 10 Downing.
221B Baker Street.
Baker Street, right. Yeah, that's the nicest thing anyone said about the title. And I may now go back to it, because I would like the cover of it to be the house. It's been completely changed by a new owner, which should not have, it was a historic building, so it shouldn't have been changed on the outside, but the new owner changed it. So there is my entire life in a house that no longer exists.
So we wanted to talk a little bit about, you had some advice for writers, and that's just keep writing, just write. Why is that important to you?
I think it's really easy to get discouraged. I think COVID has been hard for people, but I think even before COVID, if you ask people questions, I live in Hollywood, so obviously everyone here says that's never going to happen. And then sometimes it does happen. Obviously some people have movies made, have TV shows made. I think it's better for writers in London, where almost talent has the most to do with it, as opposed to here, where who you know has a lot to do with it. But I feel like if you're a writer, it means that you want to tell people things, or that's what I want. I want to tell you some of my truth. I want to say things like, don't hit your cat. What's the matter with you? I'm trying to keep it really into light things that I think. But I think, why would you take an old cat to a shelter and take out a new cat and have the old cat sit there and watch you? I want to say that to people. I think the way people treat animals is an important part of our planet, of what the planet feels like to me. An important part of that is certainly how people treat each other, but I'm not a psychiatrist. So the best I can say about treating each other is try to be nice. If you can't be nice, try to get out of the room. You know what I mean? But I want to say things to people. I had an older sister. I'm sure she won't hear this. She was absolutely miserable to me all of my life until she got very badly, you know, disabled by her own physical way of living, by not exercising. And then she got very kind to me, and I had to make a decision. Who are you? Are you someone who can say, she's in trouble, man, you need to help her? And it turned out that's who I am. I'm her best source of comfort, and I appreciate that about myself. So I wanted to write that way. I wanted to write and say, I'm not a goody two shoes, and I'm certainly not Mary Poppins. And some of what I write is, I certainly use strong language, but I have found myself to think that compassion is the key to survival at this point, and certainly don't ever hurt an animal in front of me, because the other side of compassion is, I'm an Old Testament person. If you hurt somebody in front of me, I'm going to hurt you back. And I'm tiny. I'm 5 feet tall, you know what I mean? But I scared a 6'5" neighbor. He dropped his dog in his garbage pail because he wanted to make his wife feel bad. And two of us who were 5 feet tall went up to him and said, you take that dog out of the garbage right now. And he did. So I think writing is the same thing. You say to people, don't do that. Do this. Be nice. And if you, and I'm not talking about you, nice. Say it again.
I'm sorry. No. You'd probably get along with my wife very well. Before we met, she had a wolf, and it got loose and killed a neighbor's rabbit. And the guy came walking up the driveway holding a machine gun, yelling at her. And she went down the driveway and was poking him in the chest and, you know, got him to back off. So, yeah.
get her on the phone. But see, the thing is, she was doing it righteously. I'm sorry that the wolf killed the guy's rabbit. I'm sorry for the rabbit. I really would feel bad, but you don't shoot the wolf. I would have accepted it if he had said to your wife, don't let the wolf out. He killed my rabbit. You know what I mean? There's an acceptable way to have said to her, what are you doing? I mean, I happen to like wolves. They're not like coyotes. They're quite loyal to each other anyway.
No. He's a good dog.
Is he a dog? Do you still have him?
Yeah, he's out there, right? I mean, I could see him right from here. He's like 75% wolf.
Oh, so he's what do they call them? Wolf dogs? We call coyote dogs koi dogs. And there's a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah.
They breed a lot. But I would be, you know, if I owned that rabbit, I would be just as mad. But I would have just yelled at her, you don't let a wolf out. If there's, you know, don't do that.
He got loose.
Oh. So then there's always the option to apologize.
So, yeah, well, he didn't allow that. But let me ask you, Susan, you mentioned about just keep writing. So when you were writing your book, were there any times when you felt like stopping, giving up, not writing it anymore? What'd you do to overcome that?
I went into what I told you I do sometimes, which is I went into my note section and I said, what are you doing? Why are you writing this book to begin with? And then I would answer myself and I would say, you're trying to leave messages. You know, no, not everybody in the world is going to get to hear you say, oh gosh, I'm sorry that my wolf killed your rabbit. I am truly sorry. And if a guy has a gun, He's not listening to an apology, and you do have to poke. But those are things I want to say to people. You know, people think because I'm little that I am Anne Frank, that I'm like easy to push around, and I'm not. I'm closer to someone from the Mossad Kedon unit. If you hurt a friend of mine, I'll hurt you back. And I don't need a gun to do it. I just need my mouth. I just need to say, why the hell would you hurt someone like that? What did you get at? So there were times when I forgot why I was writing the book, and I would go back to my notes and say, oh, you're trying to say what you think about the world. That's why you're writing, because you want, if I got hit by lightning tomorrow or I got terrible COVID, God forbid, even though I've been vaccinated, but people do get COVID anyway. They should still get vaccinated. But see, that's what I'm saying about why I write, because I want to say, get vaccinated for the rest of us. If you don't want a vaccination, then, you know, pretend you didn't do it. But what about your family? What about, there are also cases of large animals that have gotten the coronavirus from the animals at the Bronx Zoo. I don't know if people know this. Three tigers and three lions got our variant of coronavirus from their feeder, and they were able to cure them. But it can, in very rare instances, travel to an animal. I've only heard of it traveling to one dog, but cats have their own form of coronavirus that is fatal. And because of coronavirus, they've probably found a cure for cats. I want to tell people that kind of stuff. So I keep writing. So when I get really lost, I look and I say, what was the point? I don't remember. Why are you writing about a 50-year-old woman? Who cares? You know? And then I would say, well, I care. So that's why I say, yes, there were terrible times where my characters stopped speaking to me and I had to think, did I hurt their feelings? Have I written this incorrectly? Did I not give them enough cheese with their dinner? But I always make myself, the new book too, there were many times, because it is about real people who really lived in my real house and really were murderers, no fooling. I won't go into it, but Jack Kerouac killed his wife. People know Jack Kerouac. I don't know that they know that they shot his wife's head off. He shot his wife's head off. Do you know that? They were playing.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And so I kept saying to myself, well, people need to know this stuff because he's a famous guy and it's important how many of the beat writers killed people. And you think of them as kind of, you know, hip and smoking cigarettes and. So I write because I want to tell people what I know in the least obnoxious way possible. I try not to be a blabbermouth or a, you know, I don't know, a civics teacher. I just want to say what I think about the world. And so if I stop writing, I go back to what my original intent was. And then usually the characters will save me. If I put my fingers on the keyboard, the characters will start to talk.
And so one of the things I think a lot of writers do, they hear, you know, just keep writing, is they keep writing one story. They go back and edit it and they change it and they do it again and they do this forever. What's your thoughts on that?
No. I'm really good at self-editing. So I think I mentioned to you, let's say I write 10 pages Tuesday. Wednesday, I will go back and read those 10 pages and I will make syntactical changes. I'll add some commas because I'm told I don't use commas. Sometimes I'll say, no. That's not what he would say to her. What's the matter with you? But I rewrite as I go, and I go over stuff over and over and over again. But then when the story of the 50-year-old woman with the 50-million-year-old boyfriend, and thank you for the 50-50 that you taught me, I'm not telling that story now. I will go back. My third book will be about Marie Laveau because no one knows anything about her except that she was a voodoo queen. She was the largest abolitionist in the country. She freed more slaves than the entirety of the Underground Railroad, and nobody knows that. They just think she's kind of a New Orleans floozy, and that's not true. So I don't write the same story. This is my theory about stories, and I don't think anyone but me thinks this, but too bad because nobody else has to live with me. I believe a person is given a certain amount of stories in their soul and a certain amount of tears. So, whoops. So, like, when
sorry, go ahead.
It's okay. I believe I have a certain amount of stories to tell, and I've been writing stories, as I told you, at lunch when I was six. Everybody, kids who hated me, said, I'm going to sit next to her and hear her story. And those were often about the same world. And when I had a godson, I made a world up for him. And I always told him stories in that world, but never the same story. And so there's a difference to me between creating a world, and you could write three stories that take place. The stories I told the little kid I took care of were called Magic Mountain. And it was an invisible mountain that only children could see, and grown-ups could never see it. So when the kids took off for the Magic Mountain, the grown-ups couldn't find them, but they were inside swimming in cherry juice that didn't make you sticky. And, you know, it was a great set of stories. But I never told the same story twice. You can create a place if you want. I've written two books, both of which take place in Greenwich Village, you know, one on the east side and one on the west side. But the stories have nothing in common with each other. And that's because of my belief of what I said. I've been given some stories to tell, and I try to tell them. Tears are the same thing. I think everybody has a certain number of sacks of tears inside their psyche or wherever things reside. And I cry when things die. My friend who I told you I had written the documentaries with doesn't cry, never cries. And I thought, how do you do that? I have a certain amount of tears that I have to cry for each event. You know what I mean? And, oh my God, if I had seen the rabbit dead and seen the argument with your wife and the guy and the wolf, I would have cried all day, because I would have cried for the wolf and the rabbit and your wife. So I think stories and tears are unlimited within the human being, and you should try to go on and not repeat yourself. I will say about Robert Parker, there are some similarities because the characters remain the same. He tells about Susan Silverman, Hawk, and Spencer. They're all in the book, so you begin to get some repetitiveness, but the stories aren't the same.
Okay. So before we go, Susan, it's been really great talking to you today. Very fun. Do you have any last-minute advice for new authors?
Trust yourself. If you want to write, you should write. You know, I think it's like everything else. I have a statement I'm making I'm doing a video about the book so I can help people understand why I wrote the book. I think if you want to do something, you should just do it. I don't mean shoot somebody, and I don't mean hurt somebody, but if you have an instinct artistically, I think you should follow it. I wanted to be an actress when I was 18. I wanted to be a tap dancer. And I did all those things until I realized, you're not going to be an actress with what you look like. And that's just the truth of what was happening, you know, the 200 years ago when I was trying to be a TV actress. That just wasn't going to happen. I became a very, very good tap dancer. But what the hell do you do with that? You know what I mean? You don't just tap dance around. And there's no like vaudeville, as my mother would pronounce it. So, but if you have an artistic instinct to write, then write, because you can, because the written word, unlike tap dancing, you can send it places, you can read it, you can hold on to it until someone says, what did you write? And if that's what you want to do, you sort of have no reason not to do it, because what are you going to gain from not doing it? I thought my friends who are, you know, who have been to college and are my age, those people who didn't follow out their instincts to do something are not happy. And I'm not saying that I'm, you know, a bundle of joy. I've suggested three times that you get me a straitjacket or call 911 for me, but I am fulfilled and following my art form, even when people said, why are you tap dancing? What is that going to get you? I wanted to tap dance, so I did. And I think the same thing about writing. If you want to write, even if you have to write with a pencil on a yellow pad, right, it means you have something to say. So say it. We need to hear it. You know what I mean? We need to hear from everybody. This is a planet full of people. I would let my cat use my computer if she didn't keep stepping. All of my cats are so disrespectful. I can be in the middle of writing something and they cross the keyboard while I go to relieve myself, and I come back and think, what? what did I write? And then I look at the cat and they're laughing at me. So if you want to write, you need to write. That's what you need to do. That's my answer.
And for me, writing and a few other activities, I enjoy and I have fun doing it. It's almost relaxing and a hobby. And then when people are like, oh, you should stop working, I'm like, why? I'm enjoying what I do. I would rather be doing what I'm doing than sitting in front of the TV flipping channels or something. You know, if you found the right thing for you, and they say it's a true statement, but you're never working. You're always doing something you love.
I agree. I don't trust anyone who ever says to anyone, you shouldn't be writing that long. Why don't you go? Why? What should I do? Eat and get fat or call my sister? And, you know, what should you do that is more important than saying to the world, this is what I've learned. I'm a person. I'm a good person. And I've learned this, and I want to tell it to you. And if you don't want to listen, of course you have the right. Don't listen to me anytime you want to. Close the book. Burn the book. Well, don't burn the book. That's bad for the environment, but you know what I'm saying. I want to tell you what I've learned about life, and it really comes down to if you can be kind, be kind. If someone kills something on purpose, do not be kind. That's the end of that. That's the end of kindness. If someone keeps something on purpose for no reason, do something to tell them not to do that again. But for God's sake, use your knowledge and your humanity. And nobody should ever tell anybody not to write, because it's not like you're using up. You know what I mean? Just mind your own business. Let them write, and you should write when you want to. I'm here to tell you.
I could go off on a rant, but it makes me laugh. You know, these people that usually say something like that, it's because they haven't discovered creativity. They haven't discovered the joy and greatness. And they'll come home and it's like, oh, I got to watch the next episode of Survivor. It's 22nd season. It's so different than before. No, it's not. Or, oh, I just bought the Sunday pass so I can watch 6 football games every Sunday. That blows my mind. I can't even imagine doing that.
I can't imagine. I've been watching baseball with my husband because there's only so much Law and Order that he can watch, and he's so kind to me about it. Because I can watch the same episode 3 times in a row because I can narrate the dialogue, right? I can do the dialogue with it. So sometimes I'll do the dialogue, and he has to listen to me and listen to Michael Moriarty. But stuff like baseball, I think, are they going to do something else? So far, they have a stick and a ball, and they run. So there's a stick and a ball, yeah. And they run. A stick and a ball, and they run. A stick and a ball, and they run. I would rather sit down at my computer and have my characters come to me and say, we're going to talk today about why this guy killed his wife because she was smarter than he was. And that's what we're going to talk about. I always find anybody's writing more. I'm not trying to knock baseball. I know that people get great pleasure, but to me, it really is what I said. It's a stick and a ball, and they run. I would rather sit at my computer and say, "What are the hi characters? Here's mommy. What would you like to say to me today?" So I encourage people to do that. I encourage you. You know, the only other art form that's as easy is painting, because you don't have to have other people. Like, it's why theater is such a blessing to get rid of, because every time I wrote a scene, I would have to try to get an actor, and I did well. Actors liked me, so I would say, could you read this scene with me, and let me see if it sounds right. I'm so glad not to do that anymore. You know what I mean? Writing and painting allow you, or playing an instrument, but that's a little harder. It's good to have an art form that is just you and what you want to do with you.
Right. Agreed. Great. Well, Susan, it has been a pleasure talking with you this afternoon. I appreciate you taking some time to be on the podcast.
Thank you. It was really, really nice to talk to you too. And you keep writing.
Thank you for listening to Discovered Wordsmiths. Come back next week and listen to another author discuss the road they've traveled, and maybe sometime in the near future, it might be you.